Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 139.
This week on the podcast, a snappy State of the Union is followed by bread bags and wig hair in the world's most dramatic drop-off.
And the greatest event in the history of the world descends upon Iowa, showering the state in racist quips, Hillary hatred, and groundbreaking and incorrect word use.
Future car elevator companions Jeb Bush and Mitt Romney share a gentlemanly lunch, studiously avoiding topics of any sort.
And New York is having two very New York problems this week: ethics scandals and fare increases. We're upset about the latter.
And does anyone know ISIS's phone number? Japan's trying to call them.
And when Glenn Beck pays for a concert, Glenn Beck expects Billy Joel to bring his freaking A-game.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hi guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
Do that.
Do that. And there you can find our thoughts on the State of the Union, yes. Which we tweeted about.
Yes. Lila tweeted about.
Which this. I tweeted about.
I sort of emerged on Friday evening to realize that things had happened this week.
Right.
I was like in a total work K-hole. I was not even on iChat with you.
No.
I was like, I was getting chats from my mom about the Joni Ernst response, and I was like, I don't know what you're talking about.
I was really bored this week over your dumb job problems.
I know. Well, we entertain each other at work oftentimes.
That's how we get through work a lot of the time.
It is. Yeah.
That's it.
If you think that Lyle and I just sort of like convene on Sundays to podcast.
That's not how it goes.
Not it.
People need an activity at work. Right. But, so in any case, I watched the State of the Union.
Right. As the person of the two of us who does not like to watch the speeches.
Really hate the State of the Union. But I entertain myself with a couple of things. One is I like to see who's chatting with who before the State of the Union. I love watching his entrance, and I love to see who's standing next
to him.
Those
are the things that you like to see, the outfits. You
like to see
the people with the crazy hats. You like to see the Hawaiian delegation come in. You like to all of those. Who's kissing who?
Right. He always gives Ruth Bader Ginsburg like a huge hug. So they're obviously BFFs.
Yeah, Notorious RGB.
Notorious RGB. Maxine Waters and Liz Warren were chatting it up. Dream team. Anyway, that was my dream shot.
Oh yeah, that's a good one.
That's what you want. Yeah. That's what you're looking for.
Yeah, for sure.
And I basically I did the whole State of the Union experience, but in sort of like orders of descending closeness. Like I watched the State of the Union on television, and then I got in my car and listened to Joni Ernst's response on the radio, and didn't watch it until later.
And she has. My dad's narration.
I was talking on the phone with my dad while listening to it on the radio.
He was watching it
and telling me what he was seeing, and I was listening on the radio.
Well, she has crazy eyes.
She has crazy eyes and wig hair. and so he pointed both of those things out, and so I went and checked the tapes. And lo and behold, he was correct.
Just to confirm.
And then I just heard him secondhand rehash Kurt Clausen's Tea Party response on the phone while I was at Trader Joe's. So I just like had him sort of telling me what was going on while I was at Trader Joe's.
Between you and your dad and
the internet,
we have the information. Right.
I watched the State of the Union though on MSNBC, and the most distracting part of that experience was that they were running this ticker that said, "Do you agree with the president?"
And then it was just like a poll on MSNBC.
Always yes.
Yeah. Uh huh.
Everyone said yes.
Remove the ticker.
And they do it by party, mysteriously.
Which was like,
I was like, which Republicans are the Republicans that we're watching were more in line with the Democrats than the independents that we're watching, because it was a line of total approval from Democrats and Republicans, and then a line that was sort of like undecided from quote unquote independent voters.
This is fake.
I was like, don't have this ticker. This is a ridiculous ticker.
It's a fake ticker.
It's a fake. That's fake information.
Right,
yeah, no. So that was ridiculous.
Yeah,
I'm sure you heard about the big quip.
It's the quip heard around the world.
The quip heard around the world, where Obama said, "I have no more campaigns to run," and then ad-libbed, "I know because I won both of them."
Well, he had to ad-lib because as soon as he said, "I have no more campaigns to run," there was wild applause from the Republicans in the room, which is like, that's not the decorum.
Rude. That's rude.
They're constantly badgering him at the State of the Union's address.
They're rude. And here's the thing.
Remember when that one guy shouted that he was a liar?
Yeah.
Remember in the thing? Like, they're not doing it right. So
this is the thing. If we were in Britain and this was part of the culture and people could stomp their feet and we could do it too, then sure.
I would like that.
I would love that. That's thrilling.
It would make these infinitely more interesting.
For me, especially, as a person who hates watching speeches.
Right.
However, if it's just going to be a few obnoxious Tea Partiers, then, like, don't be doing that. That's rude. And we've also agreed it's rude, so it's
and
rude.
And also, if you are one of those people, then prepare to have your ass handed to you by the president.
Exactly.
Okay?
Right. The man can ad-lib.
Because that was the other thing. There were a lot of Republicans sort of in the fallout of that, sort of like, that thought that that was kind of, you know, kind of, that that was a rude thing to say. That, like, that was sort of, like, snappy. But, like, you...
He's the one delivering a speech on the State of the Union. Like,
right, and you just applauded the fact that he's not going to be around any longer. So, yeah, like...
He can quip if he wants.
Be prepared.
Comebacks, guys.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what a comeback is.
Yeah. Just be glad he didn't do a Yo Mama joke. Okay?
That would have been real sassy.
Yeah.
And probably also considered more inappropriate than the original guy.
Yeah.
Or the original people that clapped.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In any case, there were a few points that he made that I thought were great. He talked about free community college education.
Yeah, he's been pushing that recently. That's
awesome.
That's
and people were really into that. That was a very people were excited about that.
Good.
He mentioned Instagram at one point.
Oh,
and everyone on Twitter was like, "Hold on!"
I know. Yeah, exactly. And Mitch McConnell scratched his head and was like,
"What are you talking about now? I don't know. What are we talking? What is this word?
Who is that?"
he was. Especially early on, he got a surprising number of laughs. It was, like, a very giggly audience.
Oh.
There were giggles just sort of, like, rolling off of the Democratic side at his very minor quips early on.
Yeah.
The written quips. But then he kept also talking about middle-class economics and said middle-class economics works, and I still don't really know what he was talking about.
Right. I mean, sure. Yeah. It's a phrase that is sort of, like, doesn't really mean anything. He means economics that are... Targeted at growing the middle class, but like it's not.
Well, and this is something that the Democrats have long used as a strategy, where instead of talking about helping the poor, they talk about helping the middle class because
they
claim that everyone in America thinks that they're middle class.
Right.
I would argue, as I've argued in the past on this podcast, that that's no longer the case, and that their obsessive focus on the middle class actually harms them quite a bit, because most of their voters don't consider, even the middle class ones don't consider themselves middle class anymore, because like nobody is middle class anymore.
Right.
We're all just varying degrees of impoverished at this point.
Yeah.
So, except for the
1%. The 1%, yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
So, in any case, I always think that's sort of a losing strategy, but I guess they're going with it again. Because not keep harping on that?
Yeah.
It's worked so well for them in the past. Then, with Joni Ernst, the big line that got everyone all...
The old bread bags.
Hot and bothered was her... She told a story that was literally a story about walking like 10 miles in the snow.
Yeah.
Like, that was her actual...
Yeah.
She did the thing.
There was no content in her speech at all. She sort of like gave
it was just like a biography.
She gave some weird biographical information.
Right.
Said that they should pass the Keystone Pipeline and then like drop the mic.
Exactly.
Basically, like that was. Even Rachel Maddow, my mom said she was watching it. Like when she was done, like they cut back to her, and everybody on MSNBC was like confused about it being over.
Yeah. No, when it ended, I was on the phone with my dad, and when it ended, I was like, "Wait, did she just walk off? What happened? What happened? Tell me where she is," because I was convinced that my feed had gone out.
Right. No.
But so, in any case, she talked about wearing bread bags on her feet while walking in the snow in rural Iowa.
And here, as an
Iowan. Went and confirmed whether or not this was the case in parts of Iowa.
Well, first off, it's not.
Of course not. That's a fake thing.
Second
off, ridiculous thing.
My mother tells me that in her research on this, because she was not having that for one second.
No, of course
not. Because she's lived in Iowa for as long as Joni Ernst has.
She's an experienced Iowan. She's not trying to get involved
in
this
bullshit. Grow up as a rich Iowan. I mean, like, I'm sure that she was a person who maybe had a hole in her shoe at one point and had to walk to school. Apparently, the bread bags are actually used to get your shoes more easily into the rubber boots when it's raining, not to put on your socks and then into your feet to guard from the holes in your shoes to keep your feet dry.
So that is apparently
a thing that people are doing.
I have seen people put plastic bags in their boots if there are holes or issues in their boots as a thing worldwide.
Right.
That's a way that you get around having a hole in your
boot. It was not like a poor Iowa person epidemic.
Walking around with Wonder Bread
on.
Bags all over their feet.
It wasn't a thing.
That's just a thing humans are doing when they have holes in their shoes periodically.
My Facebook feed, as you would imagine, immediately was like, what the hell is she talking about?
Yeah.
All coming from Iowans.
Yeah, of course. Right.
All of Iowa collectively went,
my Facebook
what?
Feed was probably like, who knows what's going on in Iowa? They're probably walking around with bread bags on their feet. Probably believed that immediately.
Right.
And they were like, I can see it now. Walking in the snow with bread bags.
Yeah.
That didn't stop them for a moment.
No.
The wig hair stopped them for a moment.
Right. Besides the fact that she sort of like had a weird bread bag story.
Right. She didn't have
she's not going to go the way of Marco Rubio, who
or
of
Bobby
course
Jindal.
Is running for president anyway.
Right.
But I mean, or Bobby Jindal also probably running for president. So maybe she will go the way of those two and quickly recover from anything that she may have said stupid. But
she was very stiff and kind of wooden. And that was the big thing. I think basically she'd been like coached within an inch of her
life. Well, see, that's the thing. I mean, she can't, you know, a lot of people called her sort of like the Iowa Sarah Palin. And even when she is speaking off the cuff, she's as crazy as Sarah Palin, but she does have the ability to speak in complete sentences.
Yes.
We will get to Sarah Palin not having that ability later in the podcast. Right.
This is, by the way, going to be a great podcast, guys.
This
is a dream of a podcast.
It's it.
This is everything that we've ever wanted to talk about on a podcast.
Yeah.
In one beautiful doc of endless stories of
insanity,
political
mostly.
Lore. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, that's it.
It's everything. In any case, other things that happened this week. There was a big controversy because Boehner invited Netanyahu to come speak to Congress about Iran. And the thing that he did not do, that he is not sorry about, is ask the administration if that's okay.
Right, because basically what he
You're
did
not
this
allowed
was
to
sort
just
of...
invite presidents of other countries.
No, apparently,
to,
I guess,
or prime ministers
they are. I think that they, supposedly, well, they, right,
they technically,
are technically, they, technically
in
they
a legal
are,
sense, allowed to do
decorum
that.
Decorum says that you don't do that. You check with the administration. Apparently, they did this through the ambassador to Israel, I think.
Right.
And so, but it was seen as sort of like a big sort of like, you know.
Well, and especially because there's about to be an election in Israel. And so the policy of the administration is that they don't meet with elected officials right before their elections.
Right.
Because that appears as an endorsement.
Right.
So they can't meet with him when he comes.
So the.
And they. So it's. He was invited without their permission at a time that they
when
that they're going to have to snub him.
Right. And they also are bringing him there solely to tell them Obama's plans are with Iran are, because he's trying to work with them on this whole nuclear thing right now, basically.
Netanyahu's been getting in a lot of hot water recently for being kind of an ass. Because over that Je suis Charlie, you know, situation, he also at one point suggested that French Jews should just move to Israel. And all the French Jews were like, but we're French.
Right.
Like, we are Jewish people that are French. Like, you are making us seem like we're not French, which is the thing that allows people to commit atrocities against us in France.
Yeah.
So, like, don't do that.
Yeah.
So he's been getting into hot water anyway. Yeah. So he's kind of not who you want visiting at the moment.
No.
Or ever, really. He's an asshole.
Right.
But, like.
But they just want him there to tell them that they're right.
About Iran.
About Iran. Like, he's going to go and just be like, blow up Iran. And they're going to be like, let's do it.
We told you. Even Israel agrees. Like, of course Israel agrees that we should blow up Iran. Like, don't. Come on. It's ridiculous.
Oh, God.
Then the Senate voted on a climate science bill in the most ineffective and sneakiest possible fashion.
I have so many thoughts about this climate
science
bill. Because, first off, it's not a climate science bill at all. These are all amendments to the Keystone Pipeline bill, which is going to be immediately vetoed, and they don't have the votes to override
it. We talked about Bernie Sanders pursuing this as a strategy, but the one thing that we mentioned was going to be a problem was they were going to change the language in an amendment like this, and they did.
So this whole voting on this is all just
like bullshit.
Shenaniganry, basically.
Yeah.
I mean,
they don't have any content going on in there.
No.
They're trying to pass a bill that's dead on arrival. Like, what?
Yeah.
That's their plan. Oh, wait. Now the Senate is getting into what has long been
the House's plan
of doing nothing but passing
the
repeals
of
Obamacare. I mean, yeah, exactly.
So they can,
this is what they do.
Yeah.
They have literally told us that this is their plan for years. So they're doing it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the issue is the bill the amendment was passed 98-1.
Right.
Because it says nothing.
It says nothing. All they did was say that the world is getting hotter, which we can...
Categorically, based on facts, agree is a thing. What it does not say is that humans are in any way responsible or involved in the situation or can do anything.
They took that out.
Took that right out. So even James Inhofe voted for it because he was like, well, sure.
Right. And James Inhofe also had some crazy science, well, not science.
Not at
all.
Crazy truthiness
to share. The opposite of science.
Yeah.
To back this up, because he ended up voting for it and he said, oh God, where is this quote? Oh, he said there is archaeological evidence of that and there's biblical evidence of the climate changing.
Evidence of climate change.
Oh,
that's why he agrees with
this
bill. That's why he felt okay voting for
it.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Bible tells him it's okay. So in any case, they did almost pass something that said that this was that climate change is a result of human activity.
Right.
They got very close. It was a 59 to whatever number is under 59.
Yeah, 15 Republicans voted for it. And the reason was is because there was a Democratic proposal that they voted on that didn't have enough votes that said that humans significantly affected climate change.
So they took the word significantly out
and re-voted on it and still only got 59. But again, like, what are we voting on here? Like,
we're voting on the equivalent of a bill that like agrees that the ocean is made of water.
I know. It's just
like we're voting on a bill to decide if we agree with all the scientists.
Right. So we can attach it to the Keystone Pipeline bill that's going to get vetoed.
Yeah. And that is going to destroy the environment.
That's what the Senate was doing this week.
Yeah. That's what they were up to. That was their plan. So in any case, Enormous waste of time. Typical. This is what we can come to. The next 2 years are going to be just this, by the way. Yeah. This is all that's going to happen.
Yeah.
We're going to have amendments to dumb bills that are dumb amendments that mean nothing, that we're going to spend all sorts of time dealing with various committees and blah, 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 and we're going to end up with this nonsense.
Yeah.
And it's just going to be an endless march towards nothing.
Right. Exactly. Now, Rick Santorum got in on the climate change action
this week. He's gotten in on a lot of action recently, by the way.
He has. Now, he... interestingly, he would have sounded like he would have been one of these 59 people.
I know.
Because he's acknowledging that humans are responsible for climate change. He just doesn't care about doing anything about it.
He said, is the climate warming? Clearly. Over the past 15 or 20 years, the answer is yes. The question is man having a significant impact on that, number one? And number two, is, and this is even more important than the first, is there anything we can do about it? Is there anything the United States can do about it? Clearly, no.
So that's it. And so they pressed him on whether so you would just do nothing.
And he was said, like, yes, do nothing.
That's what I would do. So I would do nothing.
That's his plan. He knows it's happening. And this is like one of those things I've never understood about them anyway, because I feel like even if you're not positive humans are involved, why not assume?
That is what I have always
said. It's so much easier to head off a problem before you cause it.
Right. Well, and this is the other thing, too, that I also think that you're right on some level that we can only do so much. But I think, you know, these Republicans like to talk about, like, how important it is that America leads on everything. You know what I mean? Like, America has to be sort of like the beacon of light of hope in the world or whatever. So, which is, I mean, I think wacko bonkers anyway. But, like, if us doing something would sort of, like, start some light beacon off for the rest of the world to, like, actually do something, then, like...
Why not?
Shouldn't we?
I mean, let's... Like, he's an idiot. This is one of those times where you're sort of like, isn't it easier to stop the problem before it starts? Or at least try? Like, isn't it better to try than not try?
No, because it would kill jobs.
Right, like, we have shown that that's not
that's not
true.
Right.
But B, like, isn't it better to try to avert a catastrophe than to know it's happening and not even try to avert it?
Right.
Like, their plan is to see, like, a boulder rolling down the hill towards them.
Yeah.
And to think to themselves, well, let's just stand here. Let's just keep standing right here. I'm not going to move.
Nope.
This boulder is heading right towards us, but I'm not positive that if I move, it won't hit me.
Right.
So I'm not going to move.
Yeah.
Like, don't stand in front of the boulder, for God's sake, people.
Move.
Move. That was a great metaphor, by the way, I made up off the top of my head right now. I'm really proud of myself.
Yeah. Good work.
Thanks.
Yeah.
In any case, here's what we came to talk about.
The important news.
We came to play today.
If it sounded like we were rushing through the previous week's news.
Because we don't give a shit about the State of the Union anymore.
Right.
Because something more important has happened.
Yes. The Iowa Freedom Summit. Which, come on.
This is Steve King's shindig that he's throwing. Yes. It's sort of like an unofficial kickoff to the presidential season at this point.
Right. Basically, everybody who was anybody was there. Except
minus everyone who is actually anybody.
Right. Like, i.e., Jeb Bush, Mitt Romney, Rand Paul, Marco Rubio. I don't know why Marco Rubio wasn't there.
No, he belonged there, if anyone belongs there.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe he's trying to distance himself from the crazies because he's going to have the jokes about being stupid already after his, like, weird gaffe. So I feel like he maybe doesn't want to be seen with the Palins of the world.
Right, exactly. You know? But it was sponsored by Citizens United.
Of course. As you would. Not? Yeah. Why not?
And it was just sort of like they had over 24 people speaking all day. It was like an all-day event.
Yeah.
They had boxed lunches served, by the way,
God.
During the day.
Ew.
It was not a great event.
It's classy in a way that only Steve King's Freedom Summit in Iowa could possibly be.
Exactly.
Brent wrote notes under the term some highlights, and I would argue that the event was nothing but highlights. It was highlight city over there.
When you get this many crazy people in a room speaking to people who are actually probably crazier than they are because they aren't thinkers.
The who people goes who are to there, the Iowa Freedom Summit?
Exactly.
Not a thinking person.
No, exactly. And they're only there to sort of like out-conservative the other.
Right.
So it is one highlight after the next because it's just sort of like a string of craziness, basically. Yeah. Keynote speaker Sarah Palin, we'll get to her later.
So that should set the stage for you as to what we were in for here.
Steve King.
Sarah organizing Palin an event
with
headlined
Citizens
by Sarah
United
Palin.
Called the Freedom Summit.
Yeah.
That's it.
Done.
There you go.
You can predict what's going on, but we're going to tell you in detail. Right. Begins Chris Christie, one of the speakers. He shows
he
up, interestingly, because all of the other moderates of his camp, i.e. Bush and Romney, did not show up.
Right.
So he's the only... But he has trouble with Iowa. Because he has all the things that would be qualities that would make you unlikable in Iowa.
Right.
I've long said this about him.
Yeah.
He's the kind of guy that, like, can get away with being a dick in New Jersey because people in New Jersey kind of, like, respond to that.
Right.
And in Iowa, people will be scandalized by his
dickishness. Yeah.
I mean, that's an obvious thing.
Well, and he sort of, this is his first sort of like real plea to these people right. as well. It's interesting to me because like a lot of people sort of thought that maybe he would just skip it entirely. I mean, Rudy Giuliani did this, and they're sort of like of the same ilk
right.
person, kind of.
So that you know. Should tell you also where Chris Christie's political career is headed, by the way. But continuing on.
Right. So he got introduced by Steve King, who highlighted that he vetoed a gay marriage bill.
And he I would sort like of, to A, point out that they are having this event in Iowa, one of the first states to pass
to have
gay marriage.
Yeah.
Well, this is
they
this
hardly
is an early adopter.
Interestingly, and we were going to talk about this later, but right. we might as well just talk about it now. They didn't, hardly anybody said anything about gay marriage.
They were
Chris
afraid.
Christie, yeah. who spoke fairly late in the day, it was the first time that anybody had mentioned it, and was when Steve King introduced him. Nobody wanted to talk about it, which is interesting. And I think it's because
they're desperately
they know,
trying to run away from this issue because it's a losing proposition.
Even I heard an interview with Mike Huckabee this morning on Meet the Press, and they asked him about it. Because these people who sort of, like, have known stances against it will still get asked about it, even right. if they don't talk about it in their speeches. And he only spoke on it sort of, like, in a procedural way. Like, well, you know, it will if the courts do this, and it should right. be left to the states, and it blah, 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 you know. Like, there were nobody is sort of, like, talking about how, like,
offering
the
any
Bible says it's one man and one woman right. anymore. Like, when was the last time you heard anybody
no,
say that?
No, not in years.
Years.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's interesting. But it's odd that in a state that has gay marriage, where the conservatives are mad that they have it there, in a room full of conservatives, that still everyone stayed away from it.
Yeah.
I mean, they weren't staying away from making racist comments about Mexicans.
No, why would they? That's not their style at all.
But so to completely leave gay marriage out of the day.
One of their favorite groups of people to hate on. One right. of, I mean, like, this is...
It was
it's,
a very
it's
curious
wild.
Choice.
Yeah. Yeah. But so, and it's odd that Chris Christie, of all people, was the one...
the one, I
Because
know.
Chris Christie ultimately is going to not care about this issue. Unless
well,
he's
right.
trying to out-conservative somebody, this is not his issue. Chris not Christie is of the moderate ilk. He doesn't give a shit if gay...
Yeah.
He was trying to build credibility with assholes when he yeah. vetoed that bill. But, like, he doesn't personally have a stake in this fight because he's the governor of a blue state.
Yeah.
This is not a plan for him to go to the mat for gay marriage. So, like, no. this is just, like, a thing he did to be like, ha, look at me.
Right.
And I think if he had to do it again, he probably wouldn't in this modern era
right.
because it would be a mistake at this point
yeah.
to think that people in New Jersey would tolerate that.
Yeah.
In any case, he got really into being pro-life because what else could he do in this scenario?
Right. And you know, that's sort of was his big selling point
yeah.
is that he's pro-life in a blue state and that you can do that.
Right. right.
Yeah. So anyway, again, sort of trying to out-conservative each
right.
other. Two people who didn't have a very good day, interestingly, are the two Republicans who have won the last two Iowa caucuses
yeah.
because Rick Santorum apparently gave like a very lackluster speech.
Yeah.
People
were checking their phones during his speech.
Yeah, apparently
like,
everybody was checking
like...
the phones. And then also so they go to the press room after their speech, basically, and like nobody could hear him speaking because Ted Cruz went immediately after him and like the applause was so wild from
like,
Ted Cruz.
Deafening
it was basically
for
like
Ted
Rick
Cruz.
Santorum was like forgotten. In the day, which is
yeah.
bizarre.
It's wild.
I mean, like, he sort of, like, gave sort of, and he even admitted, he was like, well, my speech wasn't intended to be a rah-rah, stoke-the-crowd kind of speech.
Well, that's not an admission. That's just a thing that you say to make up for how terrible your speech went.
And I sort of feel like he just wasn't playing to his audience, which was stupid,
yeah.
because he gave the speech that I think will probably play well if he somehow does manage to be the nominee, which he won't.
Right.
But, I mean, he is sort of really, like, trying to take on this sort of like pro-worker populist
right.
stance.
He's
we talked
to
about
sort of slightly
it. We talked
Mike
about
Huckabee
it
himself.
Last week when he was sort of making fun of Mitt Romney, where he was like,
yeah.
"We need to be the party of the people who you know who can
vote
do something for these
yeah.
you know for poor people and the middle class people." So that sort of was the speech that he gave, but they didn't want
to
hear that.
That's not that you don't come to the Freedom
Wrong
Summit
crowd.
In Iowa
no.
to give that speech.
No, come on.
Talk about
Rick.
Hating somebody.
Yeah.
Have a plan. Don't
seriously.
Don't be an idiot. You won this state. You know these people. You've
yeah.
got all of them, literally. You've
no,
shook
you
hands with literally every single one of them,
yeah.
probably.
Yeah.
So
you have. And Mike Huckabee also, he sort of got a bad time slot, which was interesting because he's a big
yeah.
star. He's a big Fox News person. He
yeah.
won the primary in 2008. He was the last speaker of the day, which is not.
On a day of people giving the same speech over
right,
and
exactly.
over and over and over again.
You might initially think, oh, the last speaker, you saved the best for last. But no, like the keynote speaker is earlier. Like basically like everybody has sort of like blown their wad by the time
exactly.
Mike Huckabee comes to the stage. And he didn't really give sort of like a huge speech
yeah.
either. Like there was no real red meat there and it was kind of like a last lackluster thing. So last two winners.
Yeah.
Non-factors. Yeah.
Mysterious famous conservative Ben Carson, a person who has
neurosurgeon/rando
Ben Carson,
mm-hmm.
Was there telling people about how he doesn't like ideas that work.
Yeah, he's a man against things that work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because he, as a person in the healthcare profession.
Field, yeah.
Field.
He's
yeah.
a neuroscientist, a neurosurgeon. Yeah.
He's really against people having access to healthcare. Yeah. And
he told the crowd that he was very against the government diving further into healthcare.
Vehemently
against the government diving into healthcare. Even if it worked, he said, he would oppose it.
Yeah, that was his quote. Yeah. He would oppose Obamacare.
He would oppose Obamacare even if it worked, which is currently what he's doing.
Right. Exactly.
Every single one of them is opposing it despite its working, so I guess that's a thing they're comfortable with at this point. But he's not afraid to say so in the terms that makes it sound as ridiculous as it actually is. And his audience was not afraid to hear that.
No, they were not. That was probably a huge applause line.
Huge applause line.
God.
Yeah. Even if it works, I will deny your access to healthcare in any way that I possibly can.
Kill everybody.
Yeah, that's like the people who cheer for death panels.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
That's the kind of applause line they love.
Yeah.
And then Sarah Palin.
Sarah Palin. Yes, the keynote speaker and a
slash
keynote speaker
chief
she
word
was.
Garbler.
A word garbler. The most delicious word salad chef out there, basically.
Of all the chefs.
Because apparently this speech was wacko, trip to crazy.
Epic nonsense.
Epic nonsense. That's exactly what it was. She walked out onto the stage to Shake It Off
by
Taylor Swift.
Well, she was getting prepped to shake off what was not a string of sentences that made sense.
Right.
She knew she would get called a word salad chef, and she was ready to shake it off from the get-go.
Yeah, exactly. The Raw Story article that, because we're going to get to some tweets coming up, and Raw Story had put together sort of like a treasure trove of some amazing tweets that we're going to read to you about her speech. But they described it as a string of one-liners designed to fire up conservatives interspersed with garbled patriotic platitudes. She made references to Obama eating dog growing up in Indonesia, which is a classic sort
a classic
of
but, line you of
know, classic from 2007 because nobody's mentioned it since then.
And it was not even that great of a line in 2007.
It wasn't. She accused the administration of not saving Ambassador Christopher Stevens in Benghazi, so she couldn't get out of there without some Benghazi. She's been on Fox News too long.
Right. Yeah, she can't Benghazi. Has to talk about Benghazi. Yeah. She probably didn't make sense because she was speaking out of like a full binder full of notes.
Right.
She, like, well, you remember it was probably a note salad.
It probably was a note salad. Well, you remember her when she was studying for infamously from what Game Change.
Game Change, yeah.
But she was studying from, she like had stacks and stacks of note cards.
Yeah.
Like,
she loves note cards. She famously loves note cards.
So she probably like didn't know what she was going to say. She probably had like jumbled notes everywhere.
Yeah, and she just and she was like just randomly like, taking note cards and like speaking in nonsense.
She
words.
Needs to, she is a person who needs to have a teleprompter.
Needs a teleprompter.
With a speech written by a person with more access to the English language than she has herself.
She's not an off-the-cuff commenter in the slightest.
No, she's not.
Here's a quote, because maybe you don't believe us. Maybe you need some proof.
Right. We didn't add any of these errors.
No. And also, if I have a hard time reading it, it's because I can't see where it's going.
Right.
And you won't
You
either.
May accidentally say it correctly, just due to your own intelligence.
Exactly. But if I can't, if
to.
I don't judge me, because this is not English as we know it. Yeah. It is good that we have a deep bench and its primary competition that will surface the candidate who's up to the task and unify this person.
No, unify and
unify
this See? You
unify.
Didn't. You tried to
I
make
tried.
It make sense.
No. Unify and this person has because, has to, because knowing what the media will do throughout all of 2016 to all of us, it's going to take more than a village to beat Hillary.
Yeah, you got lost in there. There was no way to not. No
I
way
I tried really
to not.
Hard.
It was
and
just
guys,
a string.
I'm a good reader. I read really well.
I read good. Yeah, I know.
Literally,
exactly.
I do it professionally. That's what I do for a living.
Yeah. But so the Twitter sphere, and some of these people are Republicans, like Republicans who were like watching this, like one Republican famous blogger like called the speech bizarro. People were tweeting about it. And some of these tweets are genius.
Wonderful.
So genius. So we're just going to rifle through them because they're all hilarious.
Yeah.
Here's one. I don't say this lightly. This is the strangest speech I've ever heard Sarah Palin deliver.
And here's Anna Marie Cox. This Palin monologue is basically a celebration of victimhood, much like Scott Walker's, just not as linear or, you know, sane.
Right. Anna Marie Cox again said, I cannot stress enough that this is the least amount of sense I've ever heard Palin make. Not a Scott Walker's charisma level bar either. Oh, boy. Oh, I've heard hundreds of Palin speeches, and this is easily in the top five laziest and most frenetically incoherent.
Palin, this is to forego a conclusion. Oh, LOL,
she
what?
She apparently said that too. That was a quote. It's in quotation marks. Oh, this is good. In Iowa, Sarah Palin has used half of her allotted time talking about herself and taking jabs at media coverage. Oh, wait, no, this is the one that I was going to read. Yeah, sorry. Sarah Palin rambles incoherently for 10 minutes before finally getting to an Obama eats dog joke.
Or this one. Oh, this Sarah Palin, a noun, a grammatically incorrect verb, and a racist slur.
Oh, man.
Sarah Palin is now the rodeo clown sent out to get the crowd riled and make the real cowboys look better in comparison.
Yeah, exactly. It just goes on and on. There's so many of them.
Yeah.
You should find this Ross Roy article because there's these
tweets. We could even post it for you.
Oh, we could do that.
We have the capability to even lead you to the Ross Roy article.
You could quickly find it. But before we get off of Sarah Palin and continue on, because
there's more to come.
We're not done with the Freedom Summit. No. She was the last speaker, but we're going to talk about other stuff. She's running for president, guys.
Yes. Thank God.
She's seriously interested in running for president.
Which is what you say when you're running for president.
Right. I saw somebody tweet something. I can't remember who it was, but it was like, Sarah Palin is seriously interested in you seriously thinking that she's going to run for president. You know, she just wants you to think that she's going to run for president because then people are talking about her.
Right.
She wants to be talked about.
She wants to be talked about.
But I, you know, look, besides her problems with English.
Words.
And I think the fact that she waited 4 years too long, because you'll remember, I was a known Sarah Palin get in the game pusher in 2012, because I really thought
that was her year.
That was a real, I mean, lest we forget, that primary
everyone.
Was a giant mess. She has huge in name recognition. She was the VP candidate the year or the election
right
before.
And that's often who runs for these positions,
right? Exactly. She can make money like no, or she can fundraise like no one else. I sort of don't know why. I feel like she could have done this in 2012.
Theory.
She was never going to win a general election.
No,
but if she's going to run for president, I felt like she had an opportunity
and
to do.
Let's
it once
be honest. The party's interest has never been her concern. So, she's not someone that's worried that she's bad for the party.
No, exactly.
Because she is bad for the party. Her candidacy is bad for the party. We get that.
For sure.
That's why we love when she runs.
Exactly.
But she's not a worrier of that nature.
Yeah.
She often...
No, she
probably
doesn't care.
She doesn't know what she's saying anyway. So, to know whether or not she's saying is harmful or not, that's, too many steps away from the
right.
original kernel of thought. It's not... That's not a problem that she's trying to face.
No.
In any case...
But there were some other sort of good juicy bits from the Freedom Summit. One of them, interestingly, is that the Battle of the Texans is gonna be playing out. And a lot of people think that the reason is that both of them are not going to be able to do well in this primary.
Right.
You can't probably have these two people, and we're talking about Ted Cruz
and
Rick Perry. So they are both sort of taking a lot of swipes at the other, not necessarily directly, but just in an attempt. It makes sense
clear
for
the field a little.
It makes sense for them to try and get the other one sort of out of the game. So we saw a little of that play out in the speeches that they gave here, specifically from Rick Perry, who sort of denounced, not specifically anyway, but it was obviously directed at him, shutting down the government and sort of Ted Cruz just generally being a terrible person who's trying to always
just grandstanding and not doing any actual
because he said in his speech, he said Americans are sick of this partisan bickering, of the grandstanding and the gridlock. Congress has become this debating society, and he said they fail to act, they only talk. And a lot of people
the
thought that was
debating society
right at Cruz.
Yeah.
Who is
King is
known
is
for
Cruz.
Ted. Right, exactly. That's him. He was obviously talking about him. He was there's a debate trophy named for Ted Cruz, at Harvard or something like that.
Yeah.
He was talking about Ted Cruz.
Right.
And Cruz has also recently talked a lot about how no single politician can take credit for creating jobs, which is Rick Perry is running a lot about
how he created jobs in Texas, the
Texas economy is sort of not terrible, and that's his big calling card right now. And so those two are really sort of having their own little battle,
passive
which is
aggressive
really interesting.
War.
Yeah, I like that.
I know, I do too.
Yeah.
Also, this is a Bush-style Republican versus a Crazy Town Republican is a battle I want to see.
I know,
that's who I want in the battle.
Well, these sort of little battles within the, you know what I mean? I love those.
I know.
It's just so juicy.
Speaking of our own battles.
This is why primaries are fun, by the way, guys.
Yeah, primaries are everything.
Yeah.
General elections
are way more fun than general elections.
Yeah.
If you're not paying attention until
during
the general election,
you miss everything.
You have done it entirely wrong.
Yeah, you have missed literally everything.
Yeah.
The reason we care about the general is sort of as an offshoot of caring about the primaries.
Right.
That's how it should be.
Yeah.
There was a lot of talk about Hillary.
Yes.
Steve King's pollster, who for some reason was speaking
Nobody
in front of
people.
Nobody knows
why she was talking.
Yeah. Said, don't be afraid of Hillary Clinton. She's the second most popular person in her own household.
Right.
Not a terrible quip.
No, it's not.
Carly Fiorina.
This was my favorite.
Who, Politico is calling her a long shot hope for president. That's an understatement.
To call that an understatement. There's not even a word for what that statement
is. Yes. But she had a pretty good Hillary Clinton zinger.
Yeah.
She said, like Hillary Clinton, I too have traveled hundreds of thousands of miles around the globe. But unlike her, I have actually accomplished something. Mrs. Clinton, flying is an activity, not an accomplishment. I would argue that I would like to know what Carly Fiorina's
accomplishments were. Yeah, no.
While flying around the globe.
She didn't expound on what they were.
No, well,
I guarantee you. She didn't say that.
But then Terry Branstad thought crimed us.
I know. I told my mom that Terry Branstad thought crimed us, and she was like, don't be having the same thoughts that Terry Branstad is having. But we had them first.
We had them first.
So he's having the same thoughts as we are,
he's
not the
inverse. Stealing our
of
thoughts,
that.
Knowing that he needs smarter thoughts.
Right, exactly. That's... Because in making the sort of, he was talking about how Democrats would. It would be a mistake for us to coronate Hillary, which you and I, of course, have been saying for a long time. But he, like we have been doing for ages, compared it to the coronation in Iowa of Bruce Braley, who ended up being a terrible candidate who got blown out by Joni Ernst.
Yeah. Which is...
That is the comparison we've been making since before the general election.
That's
even
the comparison
happened
we were making before that. Before
when
Bruce
we were
Braley
trying to get
lost.
Someone to run in a primary against Bruce
exactly.
Braley months ago.
Yeah, we've
years
been talking
ago.
About this since that primary, not even since that general.
Yeah,
you're right. That's an old thought crime.
Yeah,
it's really like why is it taking it this long for people to make that comparison?
Yeah,
by the way,
I know.
It's like
he's just getting caught up.
Just getting caught up life. Finally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But in any case, that is that Hillary Clinton is on their minds because. We are sort of close to coronating her, so right. They need to already
talk
up their
hatred. Well,
it's
interesting. I got to thinking that as I was, like, pulling all the stuff about this happening, the Democrats are not having their own version of this currently. I mean, there's no talk of, you know, Tom Harkin having everybody to Iowa and sort of, like, give some ridiculous speech to all of the, like, lefties.
No, they're trying to really, they're getting in the game early, I think maybe because of what happened last time.
Maybe.
But I also think that this is the kind of thing that pulls someone like Hillary out of the race. Because when all of their focus goes to discrediting her, there's room for sort of other candidates to jump in and be like, but I'm not as flawed.
Right.
And so for them to be bad-mouthing her all over Iowa this early,
right.
And the Democrats to have nothing to offer at this time,
right.
Is
well, she's going to be a mistake. She's going to be running in a primary, and she's going to be running against whoever she's running against on the Democratic side, and she's going to be running against all the Republicans.
Exactly.
So on some level, I kind of
feel
for
bad.
Her because
it's gonna be tough.
That's hard.
But this is what I mean, get when you come into a race as the front runner, stupidly, like she should have never allowed herself to be.
Right.
It would have been smarter for her to categorically deny she was going to run for president and then do it anyway,
right.
Which is what Liz Warren, I hope, is doing, than it would be for this.
Yeah.
In any case, moving on. We also kind of learned that immigration is going to be on everyone's minds.
It's going to be a thing. Well, when, which you know, Steve King, who has had some colorful language. You know, he called them...
He said something about Mexicans with cantaloupe calves the size of,
like,
cantaloupes.
Coming,
yeah.
Like bringing drugs across the border, right. Whatever it was.
He has a lot of theories about who's bringing drugs in and how.
Yeah. So when he invites you to speak at something, you have to sort of throw him a bone about immigration.
Right.
Like, he's obsessed with
it. You got to say something racist.
Yeah. So Ben Carson, back to him.
Famous Republican neurosurgeon Ben Carson.
Yeah, exactly. He sort of asked the crowd whether the federal government had the ability to secure the border, and they all... yelled back in unison, yes. And then he said, of course we do. And then went and just said that we don't have the will to do it. But, you know, as soon as I read that, I wondered whether he was giving that anywhere near in his speech where he was talking about small government.
Right. Did he expound on small government first and then go with that line?
And then talk about how the government should take over the border?
Did he potentially say that right before he made this comment? Because that's also, I think, a believable sequence of events. Did he say it right after?
Yeah.
It's so hard to know.
It's hard to know.
I'm sure he fit both into his speech somehow, and I'm sure everyone cheered for both.
Yeah. Also, Donald Trump was there, guys.
And said something racist, as you might have expected.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he said that half of the people coming across the border are criminals.
He knows this, I'm sure, through his extensive research.
Yeah.
Stats and science and such. That's
right.
It's math that taught him that, as I'm sure you can guess.
Yeah.
As a person who's gone bankrupt multiple times, I'm sure he's a real mathematical whiz.
Yeah, exactly. Now, interestingly, the person who everyone has sort of declared the winner of the day is no one that we have mentioned so far.
No.
And it's Scott Walker.
Ugh.
Oddly enough.
Gross. Kill me.
Yes.
Ew.
Agreed.
Disgusting.
Because everybody sort of declared him the breakout star. And people have been talking about him for a long time running for president. And, you know, he sort of does have the credentials in the sense that he's a governor.
Right.
He has now won his second term. He is from a state that has voted for Obama in the
same years that he
has run. He's from Wisconsin. He has taken on unions and, you know, and
big time and won.
And won, which obviously we hate. But I mean, like, in terms of
Republican credibility,
that people at an event like this, like, he has the cred.
Yeah.
The problem has always been going back to any time he's in front of sort of like a national audience. He has a sort of stiffness problem on the stump. He is not known as like a great
speaker giver.
He is not a person who is very likable.
Yeah.
Even to just look at him oftentimes is sort of
creepy.
Reads smarmy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's a problem that he's having. And apparently that was not a problem this weekend. Now, this is from press. I mean,
right.
this is from real people. This is not from Republicans who said that he was great.
This is from a crowd that was maybe predisposed to
right.
not,
exactly.
not he, respond as negatively as a national audience would. But right. I digress.
He apparently gave a really bad speech to like some Republican leaders like earlier in the year. And he now has like a different speechwriter. And apparently it was sort of like a noticeable, you know, distinction from the last.
So was it his speechwriter that was causing him to come across as terrible?
Well, I also think that they're, I mean, he's probably getting coaching too. Like,
yeah.
It was noted that he was like, he didn't stand behind the podium. He sort of like walked around everywhere.
Rolled up his sleeves.
He had his sleeves rolled up. And he was just sort of like, he did a lot of like biographical information. He reminded everyone that he lived in Iowa, which I actually didn't even know.
Yeah.
His dad is a pastor, so they ate that up.
Right.
I mean, people were apparently like living for Scott Walker, which
so
is
weird.
Interesting.
Weird.
Yeah.
That's concerning.
It's
that concerns me greatly.
He is not
who I want to see be their nominee.
No, me
at
either.
All.
Yeah. I don't know why he scares me, because I don't think he should, because he's too crazy, but I don't...
No, you know what scares me about him is, did you really see him getting reelected the way that he did in Wisconsin?
No, I
certainly didn't.
No.
He's pulled out victories at times that I've been positive that he had no shot. I mean,
yeah.
Granted, I have no idea what's going on in Wisconsin, ever.
Right. Well,
I don't understand
Wisconsin. They ran
the
a corporate Democrat at him,
right.
too, which I would contend was maybe the wrong
was
thing
there,
to
No,
do,
of course. But I mean, we're about to do the same if he runs against Hillary. I mean, that's, you know... That's not a mistake that the National Party won't make, but I just, like, he seems to pull out victories at times that he had people, you know, doing sit-ins in his state house. He was actually recalled. He had people doing sit-ins in his state house for months.
Yeah.
Like, it is
thousands of people. Tens of thousands of people
were doing sit-ins in the state house. It, like, boggles my mind that the man has stayed in office. It boggles my mind that he got reelected.
I agree.
He scares the shit out of me because of that.
Yeah.
And it scares the shit out of me that what he kind of has made his bones on in this world of, you know, us having income inequality issues and stuff is union busting.
I know, I agree.
That, well, I think, is so concerning because unions are really the only thing that we have to protect us at this point.
I agree.
To make the points that counter that.
Right.
You know, that when we talk about income inequality, it's unions that bring
right.
these points up to us. It's unions that give us the stats. It's unions
I agree.
That do all the work on this issue. Like, this is very scary.
And I think on some level, he is a person who has like a lot of credentials that he can, you know, speak to the far right.
Right.
But also, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how he speaks to people in the middle. I don't know how he's getting elected in Wisconsin.
But
I mean, like, he also, I think that he is a real threat to making Chris Christie totally a non-issue.
Yeah.
Not because they're the same type of person necessarily, but they sort of like are,
they're
both going to run on standing up to the left, and
yeah.
they're both from blue states,
yeah.
and I think that
they both have this aggressive quality.
Right, and he has sort of, like, I think he has sort of, like, that one key thing that he can really point to as sort of, like, a big win. He's
yeah.
got, like, a big W in his
exactly.
column. That, like, there isn't a specific thing that I don't think that,
Look,
like, Chris
he
Christie
He offers a lot of the same things that Chris Christie offers politically without the problem of being, like, a fat guy from New Jersey, which...
Right.
I've always said Chris Christie is not electable just because of his New Jerseyness.
Right.
In the same way that Rudy Giuliani couldn't connect with voters. Like, Chris
right.
Christie has that same problem. I don't even see him as a little bit of a threat. I see him as
no.
somebody who we'll talk about a lot because he's funny. But, like,
right.
I don't see him as a little bit of a threat. Scott Walker has that same, like, aggressive sort of blue state Republican quality where he's far right and getting elected in blue states and making it work somehow. But, like,
yeah.
in a Midwestern package, which is a very different kind
it's
of package,
package
that
yeah.
old ladies in Iowa will vote for. So,
yeah.
he is scary.
I agree.
He's a scary man.
Yeah. Boy, anyway.
Moving on.
So that's it.
That was the summit. That was
Woo!
The summit.
Boy, guys, I'm sure we could have talked about that even more.
I could have talked for hours about that.
Let's keep going.
Let's read.
No, I'm just kidding. We don't have anything
But
else.
We are going to keep talking about 2016 because
yeah.
we're not done with that. We said that Bush and Romney were planning to meet, and
yeah.
they did.
They did.
Apparently, this meeting was to I don't the meeting was planned before Romney had said that he was thinking of running.
Right.
So it was kind of awkward.
Yeah.
Because Romney then announced and they had this meeting on the books and then it would, you know, they were
people were mad that this got released to the public that this was happening too.
Yeah.
Which
oh,
is
yeah.
funny because like they, you know, they sort of wanted to keep it secret basically.
But, exactly.
Like, Jeb went out to Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
And nothing came from this.
Nothing. Well, they don't like each other.
Well, they don't like each other. And they're also sort of like, you know, people thought that it was sort of like to try and figure out how to reconcile their competing plans to run for the president. But that really wasn't ultimately what it was.
I think it was to avoid that issue and just talk about how great it is to be rich together.
I think it probably was. I mean, because certainly
it was probably too awkward to bring up.
Because there was no way that like one of them was just going to be like, oh, well, that's a great point. You should run and I'll sit this one out. Exactly. Like that was
So like to discuss it was like, who cares about this? And like, they're not going to like run together because they're the same person.
They're the same person.
The same human.
Right. Well, and a lot of the other candidates, I think, probably not so secretly hope that
they knock each other out.
Both of them run.
Yeah.
Because they really just suck all the air out of the room.
Exactly.
And that is
that
sort of
leaves room for a star Scott Walker to step in.
Exactly.
And he, I had not thought about this until this podcast, but I think that Scott Walker is going to be the person that we have to figure out how to position. Like, that's the kind of person that I think someone like Liz Warren could outsmart. That I like, that's the person, that's the type of person I think we need to find a candidate to be.
Well, I think a lot of
people. Not this kind of person.
Yeah.
Not this Bush Romney person.
Well, and this is interesting too, because I think that, you know, you and I obviously like follow politics very closely, but we don't know what conservatives think because we can't, and I don't want to know what they think.
Right.
But Scott Walker is a person who, you know, I talk politics with my, you know, Republican editor who I'm in, sit in a room with for like 8 hours a day oftentimes. And he and I will have sort of like very healthy debates. And he's a generally reasonable person. I don't agree with him oftentimes. But he, for like months and months and months, has been talking about Scott Walker running for president. And every time he does it, I just sort of like laugh him off as if that's like just like some sort of unreasonable thing. And
it was until recently.
I like you until recently, even potentially earlier today.
Yeah.
Thought that that was just a sham. I mean,
yeah, of course you did.
And maybe it's not.
Maybe it's not. That's concerning.
Yeah.
In any case, what doesn't really concern me is Bush or Romney.
No.
Neither of them are concerning to me, and
they're
I love that they're meeting to talk about nothing.
Right. Exactly.
And then both of their spokespeople said that they had enjoyed their meeting. So I wondered if they maybe had could be like future dressage friends or something.
Yeah. Exactly.
They could go do something rich together.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ride car elevators up and down.
I know.
You know, whatever rich people are doing.
It's interesting that they don't like each other. They should
Well, it's not interesting
at
all. It's not interesting because Romney is a bully who likes to dominate everybody, and Bush is somebody who's more important than him, so he can't. So, like, it's not even a question to me why they don't like each other, and I guarantee that that Romney is an asshole to Bush, and Bush, for probably being an asshole in sort of a general sense, is probably a less terrible human being to, like, sit in a room with than Romney is.
Right.
And probably is just like, why is this guy got to be a dick to me all the time?
If you had to ride the car elevator with
one of
them,
it would be Bush 100%.
You choose Jeb. You wouldn't want to do it with either.
No.
But you're being held at gunpoint.
If you had to choose one, you choose Bush. You don't make the wrong choice. Everyone would make the right choice in that situation, I think.
Yeah.
But so I guarantee that their animosity is just about Romney kind of being a dick to Bush and Bush kind of being like, why does this guy got to be a dick to me all the time?
Yeah.
Like, I think that's what that's about.
Yeah.
In any case.
But Romney later in the week met with all of his advisors
in Boston
and basically all of his 2012 people, and they all sort of speaking on the condition of anonymity because nobody wants to be on the record with this because nobody wants to flat out say that he's running for president. They all said
he's
running for president. Like, they were basically all trying to figure out like what the path
to
2016 is here.
Yeah. So that's dangerous.
There's no path.
Zero path.
You and I were talking about this earlier today. I said to you, I was like, I think that he thinks that the way the math works is that the first time it was 2008, and you ran, and you didn't win the nomination.
Right.
2012, you ran, you won the nomination, you won the general.
You don't
so
win the
third time, you didn't win the general. So the third time, you get to win the general.
He thinks that he's working with a meritocracy where you work your way up. You pay your dues, as we do in Hollywood.
Right.
As is a fake thing that people tell you to do in Hollywood.
Right.
You start, and the first thing that you do is you run an unsuccessful campaign, and then you run a semi-successful campaign, and after that, it's only fair that you get to be president after that.
Right.
That's the next step.
Yeah.
It's the next promotion.
Yeah.
In the business that is running
and
for president.
From the business
and
world.
And he's from the business world.
He's going
world,
to be promoted to president.
He has
now
successfully managed to work the meritocracy angle because he was rich to begin with. So even putting in a modicum of work makes him look like
deserving.
A hard worker, and then makes it look like he deserves success.
Right.
So he just thinks that this is how things work.
Yeah.
That's not it for the rest of us. No. But it is how things work for Jeb Bush too. So I feel like that's why, like, don't be thinking either of you that you have a chance.
No,
that's because Jeb Bush is working on a different plan where he's like, my father was president, my brother was president. It's my turn.
Right.
Everyone in the family gets to be president, and now it's my chance.
Yeah.
Like, that's another meritocracy plan that doesn't work.
Yeah.
In any case, another person who is potentially stepping into the ring, because he just put together sort of like a team that was maybe a little bit stronger than it needed to be for his run for re-election.
Right.
Is Rob Portman.
Yeah.
Who I think he put together a team that was theoretically for his own re-election, but was kind of like a potential, it kind of indicated that he knows he's a 2016 potential person. Yeah. Because it was sort of like a heavy hitting team. Corey Bliss, who is a GOP operative who worked for Pat Roberts and kind of salvaged his campaign. Started working for him. He promoted a longtime aide of his to be his political director. He appointed a finance director who's like a GOP consultant who has big ties in Ohio and Washington. So he's sort of indicating that
Rob Portman is the type of person that I think would probably behoove them to nominate is the type of person
that
cannot win this primary.
Right.
It sort of like goes back to what I think it was actually Jeb Bush who said this, that you have to lose the primary to win the general.
Yeah.
And that you can't
I know,
do both.
I've never understood.
But you can't do both of those things.
Nope.
You know what I mean?
I've never understood why they can't choose, they're going to choose a rich white man, right? That's their plan, a boring rich white man. And every year it's someone more boring and ridiculous than the last year.
Neurosurgeon Ben Carson is not going to be the nominee. Republican president.
Ted Cruz is not going to be the nominee. Those people are not going to be the nominee. But if you have to choose, if you know that your plan is going to be to get a rich, boring as all fuck white man into the
pick one who could maybe win.
One who can maybe win. Like, I feel like Rob Portman is sort of unobtrusive.
He's the type of generic.
He's like a generic Republican
who's not like too far to the right that the center couldn't stomach.
Exactly.
I mean, like,
that's a guy who you can sneak evil plans in under his watch.
He's your John Huntsman.
Yeah. He's
less interesting.
He's even worse than John Huntsman. I know you won't go as interesting as John Huntsman. So like Rob Portman.
Yeah.
There it is. That's your winning strategy, and yet
Not gonna happen.
There was also some controversy in California in the Senate race that we love to talk about so much that I'm still waiting for my call from, guys.
Come on.
So after Kamala Harris announced, which, as we said, was like an instant after Barbara Boxer announced she wasn't going to run.
48 hours.
Yeah. there were like suddenly all these senators that popped out of the woodwork and were like, yay.
Kamala Harris, we love her.
Right.
She's
and
great.
It was all like trendy senators. It was Cory Booker. It was Liz Warren. It was Kirsten Gillibrand. Like those people got super excited.
The Democratic Senatorial Committee sent out an email.
And then, and then the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee sent out an email that was like
basically
a shade short of endorsing her.
Yeah.
And then everyone in California was like, suddenly really pissed off because, so 40% of the electorate here is Latino.
Yes.
And our state houses are run by Latinos. Like this is like, we've seen the sort of Latino electorate become a big political force.
Yes.
In the last few years, it used to be that they made up most of the population, but no one was electing Latinos.
Right.
That has changed recently. So there is like a really strong culture of Latino governance here, we'll say. I mean, this is a state where Latinos outpopulate even white people.
Right.
Like, this is not, you know, oftentimes when you say that, you mean like, oh, they're the biggest minority in the state. They're the majority.
Yeah.
So that is, they're a major political force. In any case, there are a lot of Latino political operatives who are kind of pissed by how quickly everyone rushed to endorse Kamala Harris because they thought it was going to prevent a Latino candidate from having like a legit shot at getting into the race. Now, a lot of people, you know, people did this in part because we have a jungle primary system. So, like, the first person, having a sort of inter-party primary war doesn't really behoove us in the state.
Right.
That's why having jungle primaries is dumb, guys.
Right.
So, like, get your shit together. But in any case,
it's fun, but dumb.
It's fun, but dumb.
Yeah.
But so that was part of the reason that people who did do this, who did sort of, like, rush out for Harris said that they did this, which was understandable. But there were a lot of names that were getting tossed around on the California side of potential Latino contenders who people are kind of, like, now pissed or, you know, some people are now pissed, are kind of not getting into the same, you know, not getting the endorsements.
Right. What I think is interesting about this is that obviously none of those senators or, you know, the Democratic senatorial campaign or committee intended for this to be the fallout, nor do they not want there to be a large Hispanic presence, you know, in this election.
Absolutely.
But I do think that the potential fallout that it has caused sort of does give potential new life to one of these candidates.
Yes.
Just in terms of fundraising and also just sort of like, you know, a push that maybe they didn't have before. Because, you know, specifically Antonio Villaraigosa, who we've talked about a lot
on here.
He's
sort of the front runner of people's minds.
Apparently, his phone has been going off the hook this last week, basically, Latino political operatives in California begging and pleading for him to get into the race now. So I think that I think it maybe gives new life to one of these candidates.
Yeah, and there are other names. There's Loretta Sanchez. There's sort of the names that we've discussed before.
Right.
But I think that was probably the intention of raising a fuss about this in the first place.
Might have been.
Because I don't think that a sane person could argue that it was irresponsible of people to get out early on this kind of seat because of the way that our elections work.
Right.
Like, that's what you have to do. That's why it's a shitty system.
Well, and we talked last week that's probably why Kamala Harris did this in the first place, was that because her hope was to sort of push some of these people out of the race. Because there is no primary.
Right. It's just a general and then another general.
Especially in California that's so left-leaning that you really sort of like end up a lot of time, unless too many Democrats run.
She could get waxman otherwise. We remember that primary where every Democrat who lives in California ran in it.
And so you ended up with a first place Democrat and one Republican won. Yeah. Right, exactly. I mean, the Democrat ended up winning the general.
But a Republican won that primary.
Exactly. Right.
And that's not what you want. You don't want a mediocre Democrat and then a Republican who has won the primary to go into the general. You want two Democrats to go into the general.
Yeah.
That's how you win, guys. Right, exactly. That's the winning strategy.
And I think that there's a chance those two could be in the general.
Absolutely.
Because
I don't see why not. I still have issues with Villaraigosa only because he was not tremendously popular here. And I said this last week, I know that everyone talks about him because there's just like not that many Latino like politicians out there in the world. And I think they sort of need someone to be excited about. And I get that. But like, I don't know what he runs on. What does he run on? Being a sort of semi-hated mayor of LA? I don't know what his path is really here. And I think someone like Loretta Sanchez, she's a House member who could at least point to a Senate bill that she co-sponsored, or something like that, having experience doing anything like this. I just don't see him really having a leg to stand on in the way that someone who has held statewide office like Kamala Harris does.
No.
In any case,
I agree.
That's my feeling.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's a controversy that's brewing now.
Yeah. So we'll see how that plays out.
It hasn't dampened my excitement about this race. It's going to be the most exciting race that's ever been run by people. So deal with that. Then we move on to New York State, which had big news this week.
Oh, boy.
Sheldon Silver, who is the Speaker of the State Assembly and has been for years, for 20 years. Since 1994. Big power player in Albany.
Yeah. He's ancient.
He's 70 years old. He's from the Lower East Side. He's theoretically a lawyer because as we remind you, state assembly people often do this work part-time, and so they are allowed to hold outside jobs, which just opens up a whole can of worms about ethics issues anyway.
Yeah, it does.
But in particular, in his case, it has been problematic because he just got arrested on federal corruption charges.
Yeah.
Big time. Yeah. And so this has been major fallout for the state because Cuomo really considered...
For
Cuomo, specifically, because he has really considered him sort of like an important partner in getting his agenda passed. You know, we don't have a Democratic majority in the Senate. I don't think they're... Sheldon Silver is sort of the power player of the assembly for the Democrats. That's bad news bears. And also, New York State is like basically ungovernable. So like, this is the last thing that people need. This is sort of like on the level for New Yorkers, I think, of like the Charlie Rangel... issues. He was the head of the Ways and Means Committee when that happened. This is like that level of terrible. He was arrested. He was released on bond, but he had most of his accounts frozen.
Yeah.
But basically he claims to be a personal injury lawyer.
Right.
Like that is supposedly his outside profession, and he has a practice on the Lower East Side.
Yeah.
That practice does not have customers or clients. What that practice has is a bank account that apparently funnels money from his other pursuits, which include mostly getting payoffs from other law firms for referring people and funneling grant money to people. Like that's apparently what's been going on. So part of these accusations are that he's been taking kickbacks. Yep. From other law firms and things like that. And that includes funneling state money to people in exchange for kickbacks and things like that. So that's not good news.
No.
The criminal complaint is like 35 pages long and accuses him of fraud and accuses him of like, extortion. It accuses him of extortion under the color of law, which is using your official position to commit extortion, and extortion conspiracy.
It's a maximum of 20 years.
For each count. And there's 5 counts.
Oh, good God. Oh, I mean, for each count. You
know,
holy,
we know from the Bob McDonald situation that that's not actually what happens.
Not what's happened.
But that would be quite a...
That's a lot.
That's a lot. That's 100 years.
That's 100 years.
For a 70-year-old.
He'd be 170.
So he could be in jail for the rest of his life if he gets accused of these things. It's basically like... timing-wise, like, the craziest possible time for this to have happened. Because, like, obviously, politicians get accused of corruption a lot. Like, this is not his first sort of, like, brush with a scandal. Not of this magnitude, but, like, a scandal about these issues. Like, the fact that everyone has always been a little suspicious of where he was getting his billions of trillions of dollars. Because he's always been a little too rich for someone who doesn't have any clients in his law firm.
Everybody was
for his simple personal injury law firm.
Yeah.
So, in any case... that is sort of always been a question, and Cuomo is getting maybe some unwelcome attention because he had just shut down an anti-corruption panel, the Moreland Commission, that he appointed in July of 2013 and then ended in last March. And that
Silver was the one who blocked
He blocked an inquiry into his own accounts because that panel tried to investigate the outside income of a number of members, and Silver blocked the inquiry into his account. So that... doesn't look good for Cuomo.
Right.
Also, Cuomo just announced, like, a whole, in his State of the State address, a whole sweeping, you know, we talked last week. A whole platform. I mean, we talked last week about his talking about raising the minimum wage, about things like that.
If you don't have your main Democrat in the House.
Right. Like that. And if this, you know, we have had some crazy shenanigans in the state houses in New York. There were times when the Republicans walked out and started holding separate sessions. And I mean, things, and there were times when people party switched and then got accused of corruption for party switching.
Yes.
Like, have been some crazy shenanigans. So, like, this is an assembly that is being held together by Sheldon Silver a lot of the time because it's, like, totally ungovernable for the most part.
Yeah.
So this is Banana Town bonkers. And Cuomo is now going to have all these budget and issues and stuff like that to deal with.
Right.
With
that he doesn't have his, like, real leader.
That he doesn't have his real leader and doesn't, and also has this, like, bad press going on about his own party.
Yeah.
Funny story, though. Just the day before these ethics charges happened, Cuomo was delivering his State of the State address, and he was talking about taking Sheldon Silver and also the leader of the state Senate on a bunch of international trade missions, like to Mexico and places like that. So then he shows a doctored image of him, Silver, and the Senate leader, nicknamed the Three Amigos, on horseback wearing sombreros. That's a real thing that happened during the State of the State address.
Oh, God.
It's funny, these State of the Whatever's addresses are hilarious a lot of the time. I've been to a State of the Borough address. I once got honored at a State of the Borough address in New York.
Oh, yeah, congratulations.
I'm a real important person.
Do you have a plaque for that somewhere?
I don't have a plaque for that. No. I should have gotten a plaque out of that.
Yeah.
For God's sake.
That's a plaque-worthy achievement.
That's a plaque-worthy achievement, if nothing else. Yeah, but it's like you go to City Hall and then they deliver a thing about the borough. And like the Manhattan Borough president doesn't have any actual legislative responsibility. No. So he's just walking around shaking hands for the most part.
Yeah.
So it's just like a bunch of people are there to be honored, and that's it.
Yeah.
And then you leave, and you get, you know, fruit or whatever. Like,
yeah.
But so some of these state of the blank addresses can get to be quite low level when you really get down to it.
Yeah.
A State of the State address is, you know, nothing. In other news that Brent doesn't probably even want to talk about, but I'm going to talk about it.
Do it.
So the subway fares are going up again in New York.
Come on, guys.
Fuck the MTA.
You have to be able to ride the subway.
It's going
to
go up to $2.75. And I would argue that we are now at a level of expensiveness that is actually prohibitively expensive for, like, lower income people in the city. That is quite expensive for one subway ride.
Yeah.
That's more expensive than you pay in, like, a lot of cities that are more expensive than New York. Like, London, you can get cheaper rides than that.
Right.
Because in New York, obviously, we don't have, like, zones. Like, in London and D.C. and places, they, like, charge you different prices for different zones. And, like, that's a ridiculous system that I've often argued is obscene. And so I think this is a better system, but $2.75 is a lot of money for, you know, for a ride on public transportation, because there's not a cheaper way to travel than that. So, and people rely on this. I mean, this means that it's going to be more expensive to buy a monthly pass on the subway than I paying gas for a month.
That's crazy.
Like, it shouldn't be cheaper to have a car than.
No,
in any case.
Yeah.
No further comment. Just felt like mentioning that. And then in other news.
Yeah.
The Justice Department was looking into filing its own civil rights charges against Darren Wilson and has just basically announced that they've decided not to do it.
Mm-hmm. Ray Ray does not like that news.
Ray Ray's pissed about that.
All.
No,
gosh.
She's not happy about this.
God.
But
neither are we.
That's right. We're pissed too. Eric Holder will have the final say, but it looks like they're going to say that they're not going to file charges.
They still are... in the midst of a wider investigation into Ferguson police over reports of racial profiling and traffic stops and use of excessive force and stuff like that. So I think you probably will see something there. They have this. We've talked about it before. They have the statistics to back up that that's going on. Seems like they could probably fairly easily come up with something to do
about
there,
that.
Basically,
The NAACP Legal Defense Fund had filed a request for a new jury to consider criminal charges, and a judge also rejected that recently. Yeah. So not good. Darren Wilson is just going free, guys. Just deal with that. Yeah. That's happening.
Right. And a lot of African Americans were not happy with the
very
few mentions in the State of the Union.
Yeah, there was only one mention of Ferguson in the State of the Union.
Yeah. And
So a couple of activists released a State of the Black Union video.
Yeah.
Less rosy picture of what's going on.
Probably
But I mean, that was sort of frustrating as well. And I, on some level, sort of understand what his plan was for that. But I also feel like he's kind of like the first president that I think we could reasonably expect would sort of like address these issues in a real way. And so it's kind of frustrating that he chose not to. The man mentioned Instagram, but only mentioned Ferguson once. Like, I feel like he could have done a little better on that.
Yeah.
In any case.
Remember when we said that we were not doing foreign policy
news?
We're
liars. It turns out we're liars. Sorry about that.
We're not going to do? We're going to talk about whatever freaking foreign policy news we want to talk about that.
Because
it's our damn show.
We're going to selectively talk about foreign policy news.
Yeah.
Because one type of foreign policy news we like is when people on the far left win surprise elections in other countries.
We'll talk about that.
Any old place. There was like a southern
cone. If
that happens
in Namibia, we're going to talk about it.
Exactly.
So we don't care. Okay?
There was a southern cone style leftist victory in Greece.
Yeah.
This week.
And this is actually big news.
This is big news, and it's going to have wide implications in Europe, at least.
Right.
Syriza, which is a Greek party that is a synonym for something that is in Greek, so we're not going to tell you what that is.
No. They're the lefties.
They're a radical left party who ran on rolling back the austerity measures that have just, like, crippled the Greek economy.
Right.
Well, Greece is a fucking shithole right now.
Right. Greece is a shithole.
It's a mess.
Right.
It's got a 26% unemployment rate.
Right.
Think about that.
Right. And you know,
there's a humanitarian crisis going on there.
Yeah, basically. And we remember this, you know, from when their economy basically crashed anyway. They entered into this austerity deal with the rest of EU, mostly with Germany.
And that is why I say this is Southern Cone style, because this is the same economic policy that crippled the Southern Cone and caused them to just go full socialist.
Right.
A bunch of Southern Cone countries, like Brazil, big countries. Remember when they all went like full socialist? That was over these kinds of loans from places like, you know, from the IMF, but in this case, it's from the European Central Bank as well, where they basically like give you these loans to get you out of an issue that they caused for you in the first place, generally. And then they charge you like huge amounts of interest to pay back these loans and tell you to institute all these austerity measures that basically make the entire country impoverished
and hungry. Like nobody in Greece has social security right now. They don't have healthcare. They don't, unemployment rate is 26%.
I mean, say lightly that there is a humanitarian crisis going on.
No,
there.
That
is a literal fact thing that is happening.
Yeah.
And it doesn't help that their far right party is like a Nazi party. Like their far right party is crazy banana pants, crazy. And so part of this has been that the far right has been sort of leading on this issue.
The Golden Dawn Party,
the
by
Golden
the way.
The Golden Dawn Party.
Yep.
And 18 of their MPs are in jail awaiting trial for membership in a criminal organization, so that's awesome. But in any case, the guy, Tsipras?
Yeah,
a Greek name.
That's right.
Alexis Tsipras is going to be sort of like in charge. He's the guy who is kind of like the prime minister now that they have this majority. Frustratingly, their majority is not an actual majority. It is they have 149 seats of a 300 seat
parliament. And that all depends on like how much of the vote like their party gets, like in the overall
election.
It's a
crazy system.
It's a weird
system. You get 50 bonus seats for getting the most votes and like a whole bunch of nonsense.
Yeah, so they're one short.
Yeah,
they think that at least in terms of specifically the austerity measures,
they might be able to get some help
from the moderate party.
But like the politics there are a lot more complicated than they are here,
yeah.
Because there's so many parties. So like there's going to be some issues. These coalitions are not going to be stable coalitions when they do form these coalitions.
Right.
They started with like a really hard line, like we're going to not pay these loans back, blah blah blah.
They've softened that a little bit.
I think you know they talked to Merkel or somebody and they were like, all right, we gotta, because they have said that they don't actually want to leave the Eurozone, and Merkel also said that she doesn't want them to leave the Eurozone because apparently Germany's just in charge of everything. And so I think that they kind of like initially were sort of like fuck everyone, and now they're sort of like, we'll figure out if we can make something work.
But they have
a very hard line on opposing the bailout conditions that they've gotten, and they have basically said like they're not going to, they're not going to abide by those agreements.
Right.
Which they shouldn't, because, like, fuck those agreements. Right. I'm, like, so mad that this keeps happening to, because I...
This is not the way to... I mean,
I spent a semester of college in Greece.
Yeah.
Full disclosure. And it was right after the Olympics. And so everything had just been cleaned up and it was beautiful. And I kind of saw that maybe it was not going to be a great plan for them to have spent all of this money on the Olympics, because it was a country that, even while we were there, had some crazy protests that went on that, you know, they have kind of a volatile political system going on there. Yeah. And they have some real poverty issues. Part of the poverty issues were because they had just recently gone on the Euro. And the euro sort of devalued, you know, like, it used to be much cheaper to be in Greece. That was sort of how they got away with not having as many rich people. Like, sure. People were living on less money in Greece, but it was cheaper. And things got much more expensive when the euro came. So there were already a lot of issues with cost of living there. And, like, pretty significant issues. Like, things got significantly more expensive. So when they started entering into these austerity measures, I was just sort of like, I can't believe that a country that is already, like, so close to the edge... Because they already imposed this financial system on people in such a way that they couldn't afford their own lives anymore.
Right.
They devalued everything. Like, that they would also agree to these austerity measures.
Yeah.
I understand why you take the money. I don't understand why you agree to pay it back, though.
Right. I think, you
know?
Yeah.
And people are, you know, worried, I think, because they're Spain and Italy have similar economic issues.
Well, right. A lot of people are sort of interested to see, A, how this deal gets struck between them and Germany, which is probably what's going to have to happen. And then, B, does this sort of embolden leftist parties in some elsewhere. Of these other countries? And do we see a lot of people, you know, leaving
that's
leaving
what
the
happened
Eurozone.
In the Southern Cone. Yeah, exactly. And obviously they were not on a currency. It, you know, they weren't sharing a currency with the powers. But I mean, these are this is still an IMF type deal. Yeah. You know, this is the same type of thing. So... that is what happened in the Southern Cone, is they were sort of like, oh, wait a minute. Like, this is our own country. Like, we can renegotiate.
Right.
And I think that basically this party has been like, we are going to renegotiate. Like, you can decide to renegotiate with us or decide to have us not pay back the money that we owe you. But, like, one of those things is happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's exciting, though.
It is exciting.
It's exciting to...
Less exciting and sort of tragically hilarious.
Yeah.
Because... I mean,
this is terrible and hilarious at the same time.
To call it hilarious is sort of insensitive.
It's insensitive, but it sort of is.
It's kind of sad because basically what happened this week was, you know, ISIS militants gave Japanese authorities a deadline to pay a $200 million ransom for the lives of two Japanese citizens.
Right. This was not a number that they made up, by the way. Japan had promised $200 million to anti-ISIS, anti-terror organizations or something. So this was just like ISIS doesn't actually need ransom money. They raise a lot of money. They have oil money or whatever. So this was just sort of like a symbolic amount.
Yeah. Right. They don't actually care about this ransom money.
They care so little about it that they did not leave the Japanese authorities any contact information.
Right. Well, and the Japanese authority, Japan does not really have anybody sort of there any longer. And I think the reason that there's two people there now, because one of these guys, didn't he like go back and try and get the other guy out?
You know, it was one guy got kidnapped, and then one of his friends
and
went
Japan
to go find him.
Basically left.
Yeah.
Because they were like, well, this is a mess. A giant disaster shit show around here, everywhere ISIS is. And so like they basically don't have any contacts anywhere or any sort of, they're not used to dealing with this type of stuff.
Who kidnaps Japanese citizens, by the way?
Right.
They're a tiny island, like really far away, and they have very tall buildings, so they have room for
America could get a hold of somebody over there.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, but Japan doesn't know how.
They don't know how.
So basically, they imposed this deadline of Friday, and Japan was like, who do we call? How do we find somebody over there?
Right.
Like,
we have your money.
They're not even, like, they didn't really discuss whether or not they were planning
to pay the money. Right.
But they did want to open negotiation channels, and they could not figure out how to do that.
Yeah.
And the U.S., of course, has this, like, bold, you know, policy where we can be like, we don't pay ransoms, blah, blah, blah.
We don't pay ransoms, we don't negotiate with terrorists.
Japan doesn't have a similar rule, and, like, I sort of feel like they shouldn't. Like, that's kind of an annoying policy.
They can do whatever they want.
They can do anything they want.
Yeah.
So... For all we know, they're planning to pay the ransom. They just can't figure out how to contact somebody to pay it.
Well, like, that's sad. I mean, you want these two guys to come home,
of
obviously.
Of course, but leave your fucking contact information if you're going to require a ransom.
Yeah, you have to.
That's the responsible way to do it.
If there's one thing I know about watching movies where ransoms are exchanged, you have to have a drop-off location.
Exactly.
Okay?
Someone has to be in contact with someone to arrange how the ransom gets paid.
Yeah, there has to be a phone call.
Money doesn't just, like, appear in random accounts when you can't find the person who's kidnapped the person. Like, that's not a good plan.
No.
So, in any case, Japanese citizens, in a predictably Japanese turn of events, have started a hashtag where they've been because the videos that they've released, these ISIS videos, have sort of called into question whether or not they're being done on green screens. They're, like, a little weird looking.
Yeah.
And so Japan started a hashtag that is in Japanese but means ISIS crappy collage Grand Prix, and it's like ridiculous videos of like the Japanese have started a meme
right.
to deal with this.
They're like
they're fighting with memes.
Yeah, they're trolling ISIS.
They're trolling ISIS. With which is sort of genius meme. And the most Japanese thing that could have possibly happened in response to this, basically.
Totally. Yeah.
And in final news,
Glenn Beck
has thoughts on two matters.
Two very important matters.
Related matters. Unrelated matters.
Couldn't be more unrelated matters. But he sort of like went on a crazy tangent on his show, which right. I imagine is what is happening on his show all the time.
Yeah.
He's probably crying a lot. Remember when he was crying on Fox News?
Oh my God. Yeah, he's like another Boehner. He's a crier.
He's a crier, yeah. So he first, obviously, like all Republicans, is taking issue with the Pope.
Yes.
Because the Pope is
caring about poor people.
He cares about poor people, which means he's a communist.
Right.
So Glenn Beck talked to someone who was somebody high up with the Pope, who I don't trust for a second that Glenn Beck has any contact with.
No.
First off, Glenn Beck is a Mormon.
Right.
So he doesn't he doesn't have an in at the Vatican.
No.
If there's one person on earth who doesn't have an in at the Vatican, it's Glenn Beck.
It's Glenn Beck, a Mormon who hates the Pope.
Right. Exactly.
And the Pope is not sending a minion to go have lunch with Glenn Beck. That's not a thing that's happening at the Vatican.
No.
I don't know much about the Vatican because they're very secretive over there.
Yeah.
But that's one thing I know.
So he asked this person high up with the Pope if the Pope was a communist.
As you would.
And apparently the guy snorted water through his nose,
yeah.
in the words of Glenn Beck, and denied the accusation.
Yeah.
But
although,
with apparent
reservations. Yeah, according to Glenn Beck, he denied it with reservations. Uh-huh. Well, this is... So Beck quotes him as saying, the Pope has lived in Latin America where he's seen cronyism. He has seen... he's seen that and he's seen Marxism. He doesn't like Marxism and he doesn't like cronyism, which he defines as capitalism. He's not seen let me serve you capitalism.
Right, to which Beck said that he would show him examples of
good capitalism.
I would like
capitalism.
Him to show me
an
those examples
no,
as well.
I'm interested to see them myself. But so basically the guy responds by being like, he doesn't... This is what Glenn Beck didn't say to his audience. The Pope has said that he doesn't think trickle-down economics works.
Right.
That's what the Pope has said.
Right, which we can...
That's a true fact.
...point to math and science and 30 years of trying it out
right.
to
history,
know that it
history, math,
doesn't.
And science, all the subjects, have shown us that it doesn't
right.
work.
Everything you studied
there's,
in school
there's not an academic subject out there that
the
doesn't disprove trickle-down economics.
Uh-huh.
Aside from maybe French class. I don't know what you're up to in French classes. But in any case. So that is what Glenn Beck did not tell his audiences. But he did say that he suggested that the Pope have a panel to research capitalism, to find the good examples of capitalism. Which, this is like such vagaries. Like, I don't even know what they're talking about right now. Like, Glenn Beck doesn't know what they're talking about. No one knows what they're talking about. What does any of this mean?
Well, Glenn Beck was confused by his anger with the Pope because he was more angry.
He got angry later that night.
With Billy Joel. Because
he
Billy Joel,
his anger
guys,
with the Pope.
Is really phoning it in.
Glenn Beck gets home from recording a rant on his radio show about the Pope, and then goes to a Billy Joel concert, because he's apparently a huge Billy Joel fan, which is so
Billy
weird.
Huge Billy Joel fan.
Gets home and just starts like an epic Facebook rant about how Billy Joel is phoning it in.
He
didn't play enough hits
until
late.
No, it took
in the
him
thing.
Like an hour
his
and a half
musicians
to get
were
to the
drunk.
Hits. The musicians stumbling around
I don't know
on the
if
stage.
Glenn Beck has ever been to a concert, but that is often the case with concerts. Remember that? We went to a Kelly Clarkson and Maroon 5 concert once, and we left in the middle of the Maroon 5 thing because they hadn't played a song. I mean, they all sounded the same because Maroon 5 songs too, but they hadn't played a song we recognized in like hours, it felt like. That's how rock concerts and all concerts are happening.
Yeah. Well, also,
you play your hits in the encore almost.
Right. Well, especially when you're Billy Joel, because he's been around for like 700 years.
He's got enough songs
right,
to fill
Right, the Billy Joel songbook
year.
Is
it's long.
Extensive.
It's an extensive songbook.
Yeah.
And Glenn Beck is having none of it.
Did not like it one bit.
No.
Doesn't like communism, and he doesn't like Billy Joel
That's
phoning
right.
it in.
two thoughts that Glenn Beck had on the same day.
There you go.
So there it is. That's the news this week. If you have seen Billy Joel in concert recently, I would suggest you drop us a tweet. Let us know how it was.
Drop us a tweet and drop Glenn Beck a tweet.
Yeah. I think everyone...
Troll Glenn Beck.
Why not?
Over your love of Billy Joel.
I also have noticed, and this is a surprising turn of events for me, that a ton of people have been posting on my Facebook wall about going to see Arlo Guthrie in concert.
Oh, that
and
sounds fun.
I'm a big Arlo Guthrie fan.
You've seen him, right?
Many times.
That's what I thought,
I've seen him for years at various types of events, including the Abraham Lincoln Brigade, which is, if you don't know, a brigade that of sort of like far leftists that went to go fight Franco in the Spanish Civil War. They're all kind of, at this point, most of them have passed away because it was an old war. But the Abraham Lincoln Brigade has like sort of reunions. I don't even have any relatives that fought in the Abraham Lincoln Brigade. I just go sometimes to their reunion. We have like a sort of distant cousin that fought. So that's how we got our in.
Yeah, sure.
I've seen him there. I've seen him at his Carnegie Hall concert with Pete Seeger many good. Times. I mean, obviously not anymore because Pete Seeger has passed away.
He's died. Recently.
In the last year. But I've seen him. In any case, he's apparently retiring Alice's Restaurant after this tour. So if you want to go see him perform an 18-minute song, this is your last chance. Oh. I've seen it before, so I feel like I got that.
Good.
Taken care of. But in any case, that made me think about how a surprising number of people coming out of the woodwork is Arlo Guthrie fans all of a sudden. Hmm. It's weird.
Interesting.
In any case, that's the news this week.
You'll Bye, guys.
Hear us next week. We'll tell you about that. Bye.
Bye.